Mr. Oster, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Stephen Oster. I represent Karen Feld, who is the appellant in this appeal, and the cross appellant as a cross appellee in her brother Kenneth Feld's cross appeal. This case arises out of an altercation which took place at a shiva, which is the Jewish equivalent of a wake. The shiva was held for the party's aunt. Ms. Feld has a long-standing history of traumatic brain injury, which manifests itself in seizures. And in particular, she suffers seizures in emotional and stressful situations. There's no dispute but that the apartment at which the shiva was being held was owned by Mr. Feld, but that he did not live there. It was their aunt's apartment. There's no dispute that Ms. Feld was invited without any express condition, and so she was at the apartment with privilege. There is also no dispute but that when she was outside of the apartment after the incident began, her privilege had not been rescinded. She had not been asked to leave at that point. Ms. Feld's appeal raises one issue, which is whether or not her brother's agents, his bodyguards, were privileged through defense of property in physically dragging Ms. Feld down the hallway, pushing her into the elevator and holding her there, and then dragging her out of the apartment. It is
why is that issue properly before us? Why wasn't this taken up in a Rule 50 motion?
Because this issue does not depend at all, Your Honor, on the sufficiency of the evidence. It's a purely legal issue which was raised by motion prior to trial. And Judge Uvell held that as a matter of law,
We have a number of circuits that say that makes no difference, that the denials of motions for summary judgment are not properly brought to the appeals court unless they've gone through a Rule 50 motion.
That's correct, Your Honor, but a majority of the circuits hold, and the Supreme Court suggests in Ortiz, that when one has a pure question of law such as this, there really is no point in raising it through Rule 50, which questions the sufficiency of the evidence. This is not an evidentiary issue. Had Judge Uvell granted our motion prior to trial, then the question of whether there was evidence of whether or not the force that was used was reasonable would never have been submitted to the jury. The absence of an evidentiary issue does not seem to implicate Rule 50. It's clear that the owner of a condominium has a different set of interests in the common areas as opposed to his unit. To be sure, he is an owner of the common areas, and we say that he has an undivided interest along with the other condominium owners. However, we submit, Your Honor, that he is not in possession. And the cases which grant a property owner the right to use force give that right only in defense of possession, since Mr. Feld was not in possession of the hallway, the elevator, and the lobby. He was not privileged to use force. That privilege ended at his doorway.
You mean possession in what sense?
I mean possession in the sense of the ability to exclude all others. And he did not have that power with respect to the common area.
So no condominium owner is able to eject someone by force from the common area without getting a vote of all the other condominium owners? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, that power is vested in the condominium association by law.
He has to poll them by telephone and say there's an intruder here, and he has to poll them by phone to say, can I get rid of this intruder?
No, he can call the building security, which in most instances the condominium organization, however it's formed, is charged with administering the common areas and has typically hired security. In this particular case, the undisputed evidence that the security guard who was acting on behalf of the condominium association, was actually walking down the hall with the intention of dealing with Ms. Feld. But before he could get there, before he even said a word, Mr. Feld's bodyguard, according to the security guard's testimony, ran at Karen Feld, grabbed her, and started taking her down the hallway towards the elevator.
What possessory rights, then, do tenants in common have?
Tenants in common have the right to invite somebody to the building. He can, along with the other tenants, can make...
In other words, what I'm getting at is all of the condominium owners possess the common areas. And the defendant's argument was he had the power to exclude subject to the other co-tenants. Why isn't that consistent with property law on co-tenancy right to of possession?
Well, if I'm recalling the argument correctly, the suggestion was that by adopting the appellant's view, he would not have the right at all to exclude somebody from the common areas. And that's not what we're saying.
And that's not what my question is asking.
Okay, but then I apologize, Your Honor, I misunderstood your question.
Well, suppose you have, a five-unit condo building, and Mr. Feld owns one of them.
Yes, Your Honor.
My hypothetical. And he gives a party, and some of his guests get out of control, and they're causing a disturbance for the other condo owners as well as for himself. And so he takes action to exclude some of his guests.
Yes, absolutely.
And what I'm trying to understand is the law of possession, where you have a tenancy in common, because the tenants in common have possession in the sense that you defined it for me. And the defendant's argument is he has this power subject to the rights of the other tenants in common. And in your colloquy with Judge Griffith, it was the notion that he can't do it directly, but he can do it indirectly by calling on the building security officer.
The building security officer that represents the association, which is a collection of the individual owners.
I understand that if there were proof in this case that that's what everyone had said, in some condo agreement that no individual unit owner shall have any power to do anything in the common areas other than through the condominium association building security guard, but there's no such evidence in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor. There was none.
Yeah. All right.
But I would suggest, Your Honor, that he has the power to exclude somebody. What we're talking about is a separate privilege to use force. And in an instance where he cannot compel somebody to leave without breaching the peace, if there is no condominium guard, he calls the police. And he has the right to ask the police to evict that particular individual. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if you have no other questions.
All right, Mr. Franklin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Jonathan Franklin for the appellee, Kenneth Feld. Discussion of the issues in this case should begin and, in our view, effectively end with the concession on page 15 of the appellant's reply brief that a condominium owner has the right to exclude an unwanted visitor not only from the owner's individual unit, but also from the common areas that comprise part of that owner's property as well. Under District of Columbia law,
well,
yeah.
I understand that is a major concession given the way the case started, but it's somewhat qualified, isn't it? Because they're just talking about the use of physical force.
That's correct, Your Honor. But under District of Columbia law, as set forth in the Person decision, a property owner has a limited privilege to use reasonable force if necessary to effectuate their right of exclusion, and that right extends to all property owned by the owner. In this case, as we said, it's now conceded. And the person case further says, Your Honors, that the reasonableness of the means used to effectuate the right is a factual question for the jury to resolve, not the court. And in this case, it's now conceded that there was the right to exclude from the common areas as well as the unit. And the jury, after considering all of the evidence, found that the means used to do so were reasonable under the circumstances. And just to correct one thing that was said earlier, there was no finding of any dragging, pushing, dragging her or pushing her. The jury actually found no battery. So what that meant was that the force used, if there was any, was so minimal as to not even amount to a battery. There is no support in, and because in this case there's no challenge to the factual determination, that's where we think it ought to end. There's no basis in the law of the District of Columbia or any other jurisdiction that we're aware of for this proposed per se rule that a condominium owner has the right to use force to effectuate their right of exclusion from the unit, but not also from the common areas that are part of the person's property. And the, as we said before, the privilege applies to the property and doesn't just apply to some arbitrary part of it. And he is a co-owner with his other unit owners with respect to the common area, but with respect to Ms. Feld, he had the exclusive rights. He was an owner of both areas. She was an owner of neither areas. And the rule...
So in my hypothetical, just so I'm yes. clear about this, five units, Mr. Feld owns one. Another condo owner is having a loud and boisterous party. The guests spill out into the hall. He can exclude someone else's guests from a common area?
That issue is not presented here, and that's going to be a more difficult case for sure. Those other people were invited by the other owner that has the right, so they have an invitation to be there. In this case, her invitation, Ms. Feld's invitation, was solely by her brother, Mr. Feld. She did not have any invitation once that was revoked and she was escorted out. So yes, in your case, I can see that a unit owner who tries to take self-help to exclude another owner's guests is at a minimum running a very serious risk there.
Let me ask that because Mrs. Feld has asked us to certify this question to the DC Court of Appeals, and I was trying to understand whether there's any significant legal issue left here after the person case.
Well, the court, of course, denied the motion to certify, so we would think that's the end of it. But no, we don't think there's a significant legal issue here. It's really just an application of the person decision, which says that this privilege inheres in all property owners. And the rule really that they're proposing makes no sense. And just to follow up, Your Honor, to rule in their favor, we think would just be to create new law, and that's not something that this court sits to do. But the rule really makes no sense. Having lawfully excluded Ms. Feld from the unit, using very minimal force, just escorting her out, Mr. Feld and his agents were not then required to leave her in the hallway, where she would then continue her disruptive activity, roam around the halls that are co-owned by other unit owners. The testimony was throwing tantrums, trying to get back in, endangering the safety of others. I think the obvious and reasonable course of action was what was done, and that was...
Opposing counsel has raised the prospect of calling upon building security. What role does that play? Well, should that play in our analysis?
It should play no role, I think, for the reasons that Judge Rogers said, among others, and that is there's no evidence here that that was a requirement in any legal sense. And the building owner would then just be exercising what they now concede is Mr. Feld's right to exclude. I can see good reasons why buildings and owners and the condominium association and the guards wouldn't want to get involved in this kind of a situation. This was his guest alone. And in order for the guard to get involved, he would be, in effect, exposing the other unit owners to potential liability.
Let me just give you a hypothetical, just as I'm trying to figure out the issues here. If another one of the condominium owners had seen the ejection taking place and interposed his or her own objection, how would that change the...
Well, if the other unit owner says, I hereby... invite her onto the property, then you'd have, I think, in essence, Judge Rogers' hypothetical, which would be a difficult situation. And I would admit that the presence of the guard and all other facts were something that the jury could consider in determining whether or not the means used were reasonable, because that's the test under D.C. law. But I would also add, by the way, that not all condominiums have security. So to have a per se rule that that has to be the case wouldn't make sense.
This condominium did have security.
It had a person who was there. It's not clear that this was his role to play and he accompanied the Ms. Feld as she was.
What was the role of security in this?
It wasn't explored in any detail, to be honest, Your Honor. But it's not a requirement. The privilege inheres in the property owner. In this case, that was Mr. Feld. He did have a possessory interest, just to clarify what was said earlier. A possessory interest, is, in a sense, means he owns the property. Now, the possessory interest was co-owned with his fellow unit owners, and to the extent some of these hypotheticals are involved, that would be instances where there would be a clash between the rights of the co-owners. But this case doesn't involve any of that. This case is simply his guest. He invited her in. He didn't need permission from the association to invite her into the premises. He didn't need permission from the association or anyone else to revoke that invitation. And he and his agents exercised reasonable means.
Do you agree that this issue is properly before us, or?
Well, we have argued, as Your Honor has said, that under the law, particularly as set forth in the Fourth Circuit, they have waived the right. Frankly, to be honest, I think this issue takes on less importance with the concession in their brief that Mr. Feld had the right to exclude, which we viewed as the legal issue that they had actually raised below in some fashion. But no, we don't agree that that's the case. I would say, though, there is a circuit split on that issue. I'm not denying that.
The circuit, though, was concerned that it would be difficult to separate the legal from the evidentiary issues.
Yes.
And therefore, it didn't want to adopt a wholesale rule. And I suppose my question is, where it is easy to identify the legal issue, as I will suggest here, what would be the point?
Well, the Fourth Circuit's position is that you can never, it's never easy to do that. In this case, I would just take issue with the statement that it's easy to do that. We've got four briefs here that have been filed in this case, and to be honest, we still are disagreeing about whether or not they're challenging a factual finding.
Here we have a record where the district court hears argument on this legal question,
right,
and then says, I've heard enough. I'm ruling. I don't want to hear any more. It seems to me that record is quite clear, is it not?
Well, all in this case is effectively a summary judgment motion. All summary judgment motions are both legal and factual to the extent they all involve some facts. And so the Fourth Circuit's essentially a prophylactic rule that says, everybody should renew these things in a Rule 50 motion, and that would eliminate any concerns that anyone would have.
I read that more as sort of a docket control approach, as opposed to if you can identify the legal issue. And it used to be the practice that, some district court judges would tell you, you don't have to renew your motion. You've made it. Now, that may have changed over time, but I'm just wondering what the purpose would be here, where the district court heard argument and no one has suggested there was any change in the law or anything like that.
I think the purpose would be to require that the legal issue, when the case does go to trial, and I see my time is up, if I might continue, when the legal issue does go to trial, when the issue goes to trial, it has to be then renewed and resolved again according to the evidence that was presented at the trial, and it could well be that some of that evidence might have influenced the judge in a different way.
And if we disagreed with you on that, if we thought, no, this is a purely legal issue, then would you agree with us that there's no need to go through a Rule 50 motion?
I wouldn't agree with you because the Fourth Circuit says it doesn't matter whether it's a purely legal or you say it's factual. Any summary judgment denial.
That's the rule you would urge.
That's the rule we're advocating, but again, I think it takes on less significance in our view because of the concession. If the court is inclined to reach the issue and rule in our favor, we'd be fine with that as well. I mean, there is a circuit split on it, and we're not denying that fact, and we do think that we have the correct rule of law that we have stated in this case, and we, for that reason, would ask that the court affirm the judgment below.
All right. Thank you.
If there are any further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
How much time? All right. No time. All right. Why don't you take a minute?
For the record, Judge Griffith, I would agree with you that where a purely legal issue is presented, nothing is gained by going back to the district judge and asking if he or she has changed their mind. Just a few points in rebuttal. First of all, there was testimony, again not disputed, that the security guard, Mr. Cucciu, was walking down the hall to respond to what until then had been primarily a noise disturbance. But which,
well, let me just be clear about the statement you made initially. So the rule should be, in your view, as to this Rule 50 motion, that if the appellate court can determine that a purely legal issue is at stake, there is no need for a Rule 50 motion, period, as distinct from what I thought counsel for appellee was suggesting, is that there may be instances where it is in the plaintiff's interest or the non-moving party's interest to renew that motion so that the district court judge can consider the legal issue now with a more fleshed out record after trial.
Well, I don't imagine that there would be anything stopping the movement from raising the issue again, either after the close of his opponent's case or at the close of the evidence, but I would suggest that it's not necessary to bring a purely legal issue back to the district court.
So it's at the option of the non-moving party, and they take their risk whether the appellate court will agree that this is a purely legal issue.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think that should be a risk. I don't think there is a waiver in failing to challenge the
sufficiency. That's what I'm getting at. Suppose the appellate court disagrees with you and thinks, no, you know, there's some sort of evidentiary issue too intertwined with what you would call the purely legal question.
Then you have chosen badly, and you're stuck at that point.
All right.
Because then it's not a pure legal issue. Mm-hmm. The only other point that I would like to make is the so-called concession in our brief. We have never taken the position that Mr. Feld was not permitted to invite somebody to come through the common areas to his apartment or to tell somebody that they need to leave. In most instances, I would imagine that a person will leave. In this particular case, we have a plaintiff who was suffering a seizure, and at that point was really non compos mentis. There was testimony that she was listening but not comprehending what she was hearing. What we're saying is the ability to use force on somebody without their consent, that is what ends at your door. Once the person is in the common areas, you no longer have the right to use force. And in Pearson, we see that there are limitations on the use of force, even though there's no limitation on, in Pearson, the hospital's ability to exclude somebody.
But it's not a... D.C. Court of Appeals has indicated it's not a per se bar, as you're suggesting.
That is correct. What we're suggesting is that if confronted with this issue, they would adopt a per se rule. And on that basis,
and
we would ask that.
Because, just let me understand why, that they've already adopted the restatement's position. They've listed the limitations. So they have already decided, have they not, that it's permissible to use reasonable force.
But this particular issue, Your Honor, was not before them.
Well, I understand, yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.